This is Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. From page one of Andy Weir's new novel, The Martian, our hero says the very first words that he is in deep trouble. Well, actually, the astronaut says something a little bit stronger, but this is a family program, so we won't go there. Astronaut Mark Watney is stranded on Mars. His crewmates have left him for dead. He needs food and water. There are no Martian rivers here. There are no farms to grow food. Luckily for readers, Mark is a MacGyver. Quick thinking, nerdy. He's capable of fixing anything with a little bit of duct tape. Andy Weir is a software engineer and author of The Martian. As a lifelong space geek, he wanted to see if he could keep Mark alive without breaking the laws of physics or of orbital mechanics. And that commitment to science earned him a lot of fans when he posted The Martian for free online. And now it's so popular, the book is out in dead tree form, so to speak. Andy joins me from Palo Alto, California. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks for having me.
How does Mark Watney find himself in this tight spot? He's just stranded all alone on Mars.
Well, his crew of six were on the surface exploring Mars, and they have a habitat where they live. And then they have a ship called the MAV, which stands for Mars Ascent Vehicle, which will take them up to the main ship that they use to go back to Earth. And there's a sandstorm that ends up washing the mission after just six days of the planned 31 days that they were supposed to be there. And the sandstorm damages Mark's suit. He gets hit by some flying debris. Basically, it ripped apart their communications antenna and dish, and he gets hit with flying debris and goes tumbling down a hill. They're unable to find him, and they need to scrub the mission. Their suits are networked together, and everybody else got the message that his suit dropped to zero or almost zero atmospheres because it breached, and then his bio signs went flat.
So they think he's dead. They think he's gone.
They definitely think he's dead. So what they didn't know was that he survived that, and I won't go into the details, but he survived that. And when he wakes up and gets back into the hab, he realizes he's all alone. His communication system is irreparably broken, and everyone in the world and all of his crewmates who are on their way home all think he's dead.
And he has to figure out how to survive, how to make food, how to get water, how to move around on the planet all by himself. And this book is really so loaded, so wonderfully written and loaded with geek speak. I mean, about details of how he does this in great detail. Did you have to look all this stuff up in advance, or is this something you've been following your whole life and said, I finally have an opportunity to write something about what I'm most interested in?
Well, kind of both. I mean, I've been a huge space nerd my whole life. I've always loved the space program, everybody's space program, not just the U.S., and manned spaceflight, probes, all that stuff. So I've been a huge fan. And then also I did have to do a lot of research for the book because I wanted to make everything as scientifically accurate as possible. Mm-hmm. So all the things that happen in it, I checked the math. All the technology that's shown in the book is real and exists today, except for in the book, they have better versions of it, more efficient, more effective, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. He's really like MacGyver on Mars, figuring out how he's going to grow his own food.
I hear that a lot. Yeah, he's a very resourceful. He's a very resourceful guy, and he's also sort of a smart aleck, and so
that's the charm of him. You know, you've written your character so well that. He basically the whole book is his diary, we enjoy reading his diary, and he carries the narrative himself, and he does it very well.
Well, thanks.
I mean, did you get any help from other nerds and geeks telling you, you know, you got a problem here? Here's how you might solve it.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I originally posted it, it was just a serial fiction story that I was posting to my website. I didn't realize it would become a published book someday. And so I published each chapter one at a time, and I got a lot of feedback from readers saying, like, oh, you got this wrong, or oh, the math on this is wrong. Mm-hmm. That's helpful. Or you misunderstood how the chemistry works on this thing. Here's how it would properly work. And so I got to fix those problems. And so by the time the book was done, it was really very accurate.
Yeah, very accurate. Andy Weir, we're talking with Andy Weir, author of the new novel, The Martian. Our number is 844-724-8255, 844-SCI-TALK, if you'd like to join the conversation. Did you have the whole story planned out in advance in your head?
Well, I had the ending that I wanted, and I had a few problems and catastrophes that he was going to face in mind. But for the most part, I just kind of let it grow organically. I felt like I'd done the best job in the parts where each problem he has is caused by the solutions to his previous problem. So it's just this sequence that is all plausible and makes sense. There's not a lot of coincidences, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And how did you calculate whether all of these MacGyver-like solutions could actually work? Is that something that you used real formula?
I sat down and did the math and the physics and the chemistry. I'm particularly weak on chemistry, so that's what I would ask other people, chemists and stuff. I know a lot of scientists and people mm-hmm. who know scientists.
And you actually wrote a program for orbital mechanics, because that's part of the book. In there,
yeah.
To figure out how this might end well.
Right. I'm a software engineer. That's my actual job, and so I wrote some software to figure out the orbital path that their main ship, which is called Hermes, would take to get from Earth to Mars and then back from Mars to Earth. And the reason I had to do that is because it's an ion drive engine, which means it's constantly accelerating a little bit all the time. Mm-hmm. It's pretty easy to calculate transfer orbits if they just have a point thrust at one planet and then another point thrust to match speeds of the other planet. But this was well beyond my ability to just calculate mathematically. And so I tried to see, what does NASA do for this? And I found out a lot of what NASA does is simulation.
Yeah.
So I wrote my own.
Wow. One of the first problems your stranded astronaut has is how to make water. Describe how he does this.
Well, because of some equipment left behind that had to do with the MAV, there was a pump that could collect Martian atmosphere and then just store it in a tank for him. And the Martian atmosphere is almost entirely carbon dioxide. So he had basically an unlimited supply of carbon dioxide. In his habitat, he has a thing called the oxygenator. This is real technology. It'll pull the carbons off the CO2 and release the oxygen. So it turns CO2 back into oxygen for you. And then so he goes like, okay, that's oxygen. That's how you get oxygen. That's half of the recipe for water. The other half is hydrogen. The Mars descent vehicle, which is the ship that they took to land on Mars, had a bunch of hydrazine fuel left over because their pilot was really good and landed very efficiently and didn't need to use any of the reserve fuel. And hydrazine has a lot of hydrogen in it. The problem is when you liberate the hydrogen, it tends to explode and burn and everybody dies. So he needed to come up with a method of like using the engine equipment from the MDV to liberate the hydrogen from the hydrazine and then burn mm-hmm. off the hydrogen with the oxygen that he'd made. And when you burn hydrogen with oxygen, you get water.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. It's all laid out there. And he also has to figure out a way that he's going to feed himself. Because
yep.
he wasn't supposed to be there for it's like years he has to stay there, right?
Right. The original mission plan was 31 days, and they left after 6. So he has something like 25 days worth of food for 6 astronauts, mm-hmm. which works out. And they had sent twice as much food as necessary. The end result is he had about a year worth of food on hand, but he has to survive, by his estimate, 4 years until the next manned mission lands, where he figures he can hitch a ride home. So one thing he had with him was their mission overlapped Thanksgiving Day. And so something that NASA did for crew morale sort of thing, they had planned to have them prepare an abbreviated Thanksgiving dinner for themselves. So he had actual potatoes, not just like powdered potato mush, but potatoes. And the potatoes were still viable for planting. And so he's able to plant potatoes and then grow more potatoes.
Did you ever get your astronaut into a problem that you didn't know whether you could get him out of it or not?
Yeah, I absolutely did. And then I would just have to back it up and have him get into another problem. I can cheat like that. I'm the writer.
So you can give him little tools that you didn't think of before.
a little cheats.
Well, yeah. Well, so I would often find myself I'd be like, there is just no plausible way for him to get out of this.
Yeah.
So I'd go back into the story and put in a few references here and there to some gizmo or something, something that he can use to solve the problem. And then go like, okay, there we go. I waved a wand, and now he has this thing, and had it all along.
Let me put it this way: you paint not a very flattering portrait of the folks back at NASA.
That certainly wasn't the intention.
Well, they certainly do help him at some point, but that there are certain people. I don't mean everybody there, of course, but there are certain people who would, you know. He sort of has some rude comments about during his narrative.
Well, there was a little bit of conflict back at NASA on what was it within the show about show book about what was the best way to help him.
Right.
And people felt, you know, the characters felt strongly about that and would argue about it. But they all certainly like pulled together and made it their number one priority to try to keep him alive and figure out a way to rescue him.
Yeah, it was very much so. They did it very much sort of an Apollo 13 sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you make references to it, and I love that reference you made that what they learned from Apollo 13 was to have standardized valve fittings. You know.
Yes.
Because we all know from the experience and watching the movie that when they tried to put things together, they had round holes and square pegs and things.
Yeah.
Things like that. How much were you influenced by other films or other novels or other science fiction?
Well, definitely a lot of influence from Apollo 13. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and I just felt like, in fact, you mentioned the air filter problem that they had, and this happened in real life, of course, was that they had one kind of CO2 filter that wouldn't fit into the CO2 regulation system that they had because it was made for the command module and not the lunar module, and they had to rig up this device, this thing made out of just stuff found around the spacecraft to run the air through it. And that was, I just thought that was so cool. So that was kind of one of my goals with The Martian, is to make a whole book full of that stuff.
Was Mark your astronaut? Was he based on any one particular astronaut from space program?
He's not based on any real world person. No, he's just kind of smart alecky. His personality is based on me. Although just the best parts of me, he doesn't have any of my flaws.
People have called your book, The Martian, hard sci-fi. What is hard sci-fi? Do you consider yourself a hard sci-fi writer?
I do, and that's what I it's also my favorite kind of sci-fi. Hard sci-fi I would define as just plausible science fiction, something that could happen today or something that could happen within a very short time of today. No warp engines, no faster-than-light travel, no aliens, no nothing. Just the science that we have right now applied in a particular direction to make something interesting happen.
You know, Margaret Atwood, you know, the science writer, science fiction writer, she doesn't like to be called a science fiction writer. She says basically the same thing, that my books don't really anticipate something that doesn't exist, just something that's a little further advanced than we have now.
Yeah, being called a science fiction writer.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI. Talking about this great new book, The Martian. Oh, is it out in publication now?
Out right now.
Yeah, Andy, do you have second thoughts about writing another one? I mean, you had to publish this one yourself, give it away for nothing until somebody discovered it and people loved it, and then the standard book publishers came along.
Yeah, that's right. Although that wasn't a plan of mine. I was just publishing it. I was just posting it for free just because writing it was my hobby. And then some people said, well, I don't like reading it on a web page. Can you make an e-reader format for it? And so I did. I made an EPUB and a Mobi version and posted it on my website. And then people said, well, I'm not very technically savvy and I don't know how to get... I don't know how to download one of those things from a website and get it onto my e-reader. Can you just post it to Kindle, Amazon Kindle? And so I did. And then Amazon has a minimum price that you have to charge. You're not allowed to give away your stuff for free. And so I said, okay, everybody, well, you can download for free from my site, or you can pay 99 cents for the Kindle version. Just think of it as you're paying 99 cents to have them put it on your Kindle for you.
There
think
you
of
go.
It that way.
Yeah, I think.
And then more people bought the Kindle version than downloaded it for free. Oh,
wow.
They just really like doing that.
Love
that. That made it climb up the list, and that got the attention of the big publishers.
Let's go to Tim on the phone in Inkster, Michigan. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Ira. Great to talk to you. I was wondering if your author ever saw the science fiction movie Robinson Crusoe on Mars, and if that's where he got any of his idea.
Thanks for the call.
I did see the movie a long time ago when I was a kid. I wouldn't say that it was inspired by it. It is, you know, obviously a very similar theme, although mine doesn't have a sidekick monkey or aliens or little pills that you can take to get all the oxygen you need so you don't need a spacesuit when you're on Mars. Robinson Crusoe on Mars is a great 1950s pulpy kind of sci-fi romp, and it's really fun. But other than that and a guy stranded on Mars, that's the only correlation.
Did astronauts call you while you were in your free phase there, giving the book away? Did astronauts ever call up and say, hey, you know, try this, try that. We know how to fix this, fix that.
Yeah, I did get an email from a number of astronauts that I thought was just awesome. I'm like, wow. And one of them pointed out some ways that Mark could have, like, baked the carbon dioxide out of his CO2 filters and reused them. That I didn't even know you could do that.
So have you got a sequel in mind?
Right now I'm working on another book pitch that I'm going to pitch to the publisher. And so I'm being cagey and not really talking much about it because I'd like them to hear it from me first.
Oh, come on. No one's listening. You can just give us
Oh, no one's listening. Well, okay.
See, but you're feeling better about the publishers now that they'll actually listen to you and...
Oh, yeah. Oh, but, yeah. I think,
it sounds like a great plot for a movie also.
I hope so. 20th Century Fox optioned the movie rights, and so they've got Drew Goddard to direct and write the screenplay. He's written the screenplay, and I understand they're pitching it out to actors to see who might be interested in playing the lead.
And you would like to see whom?
Well, I have no say in it at all, and I don't even have anything to say about the selection process, but I think Bradley Cooper would be really good. Is that? Yeah. He's the one from the Silver Linings Playbook, right?
Right.
Yeah, he does that personality really well, I think.
How about Aaron Paul in Breaking Bad?
Yeah, I think he'd be pretty cool, too. Yeah,
he's got that personality.
He's got the personality.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back more and talk with Andy Weir, author of The Martian, a great science fiction book. And we're going to say thank you for taking time to be with us today, Andy.
Thank you.
And good luck with your book, The Martian. It's a great read. If you're looking for something really interesting, I highly recommend it.